The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Europod. What's happening over there? All your favourite goal scorers. Ibrahimovic reaches 500. That's goals, not years old. But more for him. Keep AC Milan at the top. Meanwhile, in Turin, Ronaldo passes 300 since turning 30. Messi off the bench to score. How happy is he now? We all know his contract details. There's two more for Suarez. And over in Doha, two for Lewandowski as Bayern get to the Club World Cup final. All that plus status quo covers, the great grandchildren of dictators, and PSG are not top of Ligue 1. We'll take a trip to Barry's Boulangerie. As always, your questions are the best part, and I'll ask them to a panel that I'll introduce in 1 second on the Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Sid Lowe, hello.
Hello, Max. How are you?
Yeah, marvellous. Thanks. Archie Rintutz out in Cologne. Hello.
Hello, Max.
What are you laughing at already?
I'm still laughing at Barry's Boulangerie.
Okay, well, we'll get there eventually. Nikki Bandini, hello.
Morning. I'm sad now because in normal times, sometimes going to the Guardian office would involve going past like a outdoor market with boulangerie items.
Absolutely.
Which can't get.
We just have to imagine. We have to imagine. We paint pictures with words for the
Barry there
people.
With an apron.
Exactly.
And being
can I have a croissant? That's a stupid question. I can't do that. Vinay says, is Barry lucky not to be on the bench after the slow start to yesterday's podcast?
Yeah, I was unhappy with that. I explained to you earlier my thought process when I had that brain fart over the Phil Foden opening question. I thought, well, if I ask them to take it out in the edit, they definitely won't. So if I say nothing, they might take it out, but because Max drew attention to it, they almost certainly will leave it in, and that's what happened. So thank you for that. I don't enjoy the manner in which you consistently try to make me look stupid in an effort to make yourself appear better to the listener.
Well, I'd say, as staggeringly bad as your first answer was yesterday, the answer you've just provided has given us more insight on the European leagues than you gave on Phil Foden yesterday and the first answer to yesterday's pod. Anyway, let's get on. We'll start in Spain. Hey, Sid. Leo Messi scored 3 minutes after coming off the bench. Barcelona came from behind to beat Real Betis. Looked like a really open game, actually.
Well, given that we're on first answers, I'm going to go off track straight away right from the start, because you're talking about, you know, not giving the right answer or not knowing what you're talking about. There was an absolutely brilliant moment. I think it was about 2 weeks ago when Athletic Bilbao won the Super Cup and Yaki Williams scores a brilliant goal. And Bernd Schuster, who of course was a brilliant German footballer, played for Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid and Barcelona, is now a radio commentator. And there's this fantastic little bit of footage where they go to Schuster. Schuster, yeah. Bernd? Yeah. Are you all right? Yeah, I suppose so. What are you doing? Well, I'm here. Did you see Iñaki's goal? No. What? No, I had dinner and I missed it. But Bernd, you didn't see Iñaki's goal? No, it's quite late. It's not that late, Bernd. It's very late. Basically, he had 5 minutes of Bernd Schuster saying, I haven't seen this goal. And it was the best analysis I think we've ever heard from him.
We should get him on.
We should. Can we talk about Messi's contract? Because we actually haven't spoken to you about that yet and sort of what the fallout's been and where we're currently at with it.
Well, I mean, I don't know which bits you've picked up on. I'm sure everyone knows the basics, which is that Messi's contract's been released, the size of it, it's absolutely colossal. And of course, one of the big questions that's been asked about it is where did this get leaked by and in whose interests? And of course, the natural response is to say that in whose interest is it to leak a contract that makes Messi look bad? Well, the people who gave him that contract, to kind of take the blame away from them, or the people responsible for Barcelona's current financial situation, the fact that they are in an enormous amount of debt. And yet, if the plan was effectively to kind of take the heat off and put it onto Messi, it really hasn't worked. Because I think the majority, I mean, obviously not everybody, and there are a lot of people who look at it and say, well, the bottom line is that the figures are absolutely eye-watering. You know, they are huge. But the majority of people said, well, yeah, Messi deserves it. It's not Messi that ruins the club. It's those players who come and get a fortune for not doing very much. It's the people who've financially mismanaged it. It's the people who offer him in that contract and allow that to happen. And so in a way, I think it's, it's almost reinforced Messi in a way, because that it's created kind of a backlash. It's created a series of responses in terms of people doing analyses of how much he generates in terms of his impact in footballing as well as financial terms. And so curiously enough, that story has done Messi, I think, a lot less damage than was probably the intention.
Yeah. Ruin is not the first verb that springs to mind when I think about Messi's contribution to Barcelona.
Exactly.
What's the fallout of this? You know, like, do you know who leaked it and you know, are Barcelona suing El Mundo over this?
Well, this is the thing. The fallout is obviously is yet to be seen how this works out, because of course lots of people quite often say, "Oh, we reserve the right to take legal action." Which I've always thought is the most empty phrase on the planet. We reserve the right to take legal action. No, mate. You have the right to take legal action. If you want to take legal action, do it. Don't tell us you're reserving the right to do it. No, do it then. In this case, Barcelona have said that they will act against El Mundo. Obviously not for the content, but for the fact that the content was there. You know, this is a private contract and should not have been made public. They have also said it wasn't us. The former president, Josep Maria Bartomeu, who I think was culprit number one for most people, the first suspect, has said it's not him. There's been suggestions that Messi will take on a whole series of people, including some people at the club before and some people at the club now. I suppose, if you do start that legal action, and obviously let's see if he actually starts it, because I suspect he won't. If you do start that legal action, I guess that's one way of finding out who it actually was.
How angry was Messi over this?
It's difficult to know because, of course, publicly hasn't said anything. I quite enjoyed. I can't remember what exactly it was that sparked this. I think it was, in fairness, I think it was about the possibility of him going to Paris Saint-Germain or whatever, rather than specifically about the contract. But it was in the context of that. There was a story in one of the media groups that's quite close to him saying Messi is sick of this and is sick of stories coming in the media and he will not talk to the media and it's not about media links and when there's anything to be said, Messi will say it himself publicly, in brackets, says Messi through media that's leaking his story.
meanwhile, like, Barcelona are on a really good run. All right, they're still, 8 points behind Atleti, and Atleti got a game in hand. But they're level with Real Madrid as well, right? And Sevilla 1 point behind. Could this whole season and, you know, the madness and, you know, Koeman coming in as this sort of dead man walking, could they ludicrously turn it around and actually win the league?
Well, someone said to me the other day, and they said, well, look, they've got Lionel Messi. And you know, I know a lot of people will be, certainly those who are not Messi fans, will be saying, yeah, but look at what they've done in the Champions League over recent years. And of course, there is an argument there. But in La Liga, domestically at least, Messi's influence on Spanish football, genuinely, over the last 15 years, is absurd. To the extent that it's not that daft a thing to say, well, they've got Leo Messi, so yeah, they could win the league. And you're right, they're playing very well. They haven't lost in 11. I think it's 6 wins in a row in La Liga. In 2021, they've only lost one game, which was in extra time. So across 90 minutes, they haven't been beaten. It hasn't always been massively convincing, but it does feel like things are falling into place. Everybody keeps saying it's a weird season. And I suppose in England, you've seen that. To be honest, in Spain, I'm not sure we have yet. I don't think we've seen really, really mad results. I don't know if we've seen anything that says Atletico Madrid will collapse. But I suppose, you know, the fact that it's 8 points, admittedly with a game in hand, and if Barcelona can continue to pick up points at this rate, I don't think Atletico Madrid are due a collapse, but I do think they might be due a reduction of the rate at which they pick up points. Sure. You know, a few more draws when they were winning rather than necessarily they fall apart.
Yeah, which is what happened at the weekend. But I suppose the point is, you know, they drew with Celta Vigo, but that
was last night. Yeah.
The first points that they've dropped in 2021. So it's not like they're stuttering, is it?
No, exactly. One thing I suppose I would say with Atletico is that I don't think it would be fair to use the phrase getting away with it, because I think they've been very, very good indeed. I think they're defensively very strong. But it is true that if you look over their results, and obviously there's one or two outliers that don't fit this pattern, but the majority of them, they've been quite close. They've been quite tight. They've been winning games by the odd goal. They've normally been the better team in those games. You've normally felt like they've got a degree of control. but the margins have been quite fine. And of course, by definition, when those margins are fine, there comes a time when it slows a little bit. And I saw a graph the other day. I can't remember where I saw it, somewhere on Twitter probably. And so I'm reluctant to kind of go too far when I haven't actually checked the methodology behind it and so on. But it was a graph about expected goals across La Liga. And Atletico were overperforming. Because, of course, they don't get many chances, but they take them all. They don't concede many chances. They don't concede many goals, even if the other team gets chances. And so you do kind of look at that and think, OK, a collapse might not be coming. But as I say, a reduction of the rate at which they pick up points could be. I mean, to give you an example, Luis Suarez has now got 16 goals this season. He's only had 20 shots on target. It's not like he's getting denied by incredible goalkeeping performances.
That's mad, isn't it? Why are all these old players getting better?
I don't know. Is this a question? Actually, genuinely, is this a question? Is a pandemic season a season where football slows down so players who are brilliant but not quite as quick as they once were can be better? I mean, is there something in that?
That's a really interesting question, because obviously one thing that has happened this last year is they've just played more games. So you would think that an older footballer would suffer more. You would think that favours the young guys who can run around and don't get exhausted. But perhaps... I mean, that feels like something that you would need someone who's got access to all the sort of yards covered data. But perhaps games are generally less, I don't know, involve less running than they would in a normal season.
There's also, I mean, there is, again, this is sort of purely speculative, I suppose, but the question marks about the impact of not having fans, whether that emotionally or psychologically changes the nature of a game, whether it changes things like concentration, whether it changes the response from goalkeepers who possibly have longer time kind of not engaged with the game and not having the noise around it. I wonder if that may well play a part as well, and that what actually we're seeing is that the older guys possibly are, I don't know, are they maybe more single-minded? Are they maybe less distracted by that absence of sound around them? I don't know.
Real Madrid beat Huesca 2-1. Two for Rafael Varane. Speaking of great goal scorers there, Sid.
Yeah, he scored two inevitably. And it sort of slightly saddens me, but I understand why. Inevitably, everyone said, Varane does a Ramos. And it seems, you know, even when Ramos is not there, everyone has to talk about him. It's just like, you know, poor old Rafa Varane, who last year when he was awful against Manchester City, obviously in the Champions League. And one of the radio commentators, one of the biggest radio commentators, probably the biggest radio commentator in Spain, when the ball goes in, he starts, you know, calling the goal from Man City, and basically says, oh, Rafa, without Ramos, you're nothing. And this is what basically everyone's been saying. And so, of course, Ramos is out. Rafa Varane scores two goals, rescues him and says, ah, Varane does a Ramos. So even when Ramos isn't there, we've got to tell everyone that Ramos is wonderful. And this does happen a little bit. I mean, this is no more than a little aside, but I think it's quite a telling aside. There was a column in one of the papers the other day about Ramos's current injury, and it was a column by a doctor. And so a doctor was talking about the injury, the mechanics of an injury. And they still couldn't help the comma, who is one of the greatest defenders of all time, comma. You know, Sergio Ramos, comma, who's one of the greatest defenders of all time, has got an injury. It's like, do we need that bit? Do we need to be telling everyone how wonderful he is all the time? Of course, part of the context of this is he's still not renewed his contract with Real Madrid. So there is a battle going on there over his future. I think, to be honest, unless something really dramatically changes now, he won't be at Real Madrid next season.
Ooh, where will he be, Sid?
Paris Saint-Germain, probably.
I thought you were going to say West Brom or something, you know, to sort out Big Sam's first season in the Championship.
And David Alaba expected to come in instead of him then?
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that I'm slightly... the one thing that kind of stops me saying Alaba to Real Madrid is done, because Madrid internally are letting it be known that this is in place. The thing that stops me saying that is that I don't trust them. Essentially, that I don't trust that this isn't part of a mechanism to try and force Ramos's hand to say, look, don't ask for more money. Don't ask for this 2-year contract that you want on basically slightly better terms than before, because essentially he wants the same contract, but without the 10% reduction that everyone else is getting because of COVID, because we've got this other guy. And so that's the one thing that makes me think maybe it's not done. Maybe if Ramos was to use the rather unfortunate Spanish phrase, to drop his pants at this point, maybe if that was to happen and he was to renew, I wonder if that means that Alaba doesn't eventually come, and that it's a means of leverage at this point. But Madrid are privately letting it be known that, yeah, this is in place.
Finally, so you wanted to talk about Royston Drenthe?
Yeah, good old Royston Drenthe, who's playing for Tercera División Racing Murcia. Now, the Spanish Tercera División isn't the third division, even though its name is third division, because Spain's structure... And let me bore you with this. Goes First Division, Second Division, Second Division B. But Second Division B is 102 teams spread across five divisions. The Third Division is 360 teams spread across 17 divisions. So when Royston Drenthe is playing for a Third Division team, we're not saying third tier, we're saying what? Anything from kind of 7th to 26th tier. I went to see him play. I went 850 kilometres. He didn't play a minute. He didn't get on the pitch. which was slightly disappointing. Anyway, that was last weekend. This weekend he did play and he scored. And it was a lovely volley. So I was a week too early.
Yes, Nikki?
I'm going to ask Sid, like, every time I'm on a show with Sid now for the rest of the season, how's Papu Gomez doing?
Well, Papu Gomez scored this weekend. He played a little bit in the cup in midweek. He played this weekend as well. He started. I mean, I'm quite interested in his position, and we've talked about this before, Nicky, about what kind of where he best fits. He sort of started in the front three, but then dropped into the middle three, and it seems that he could be that kind of hybrid thing. Well, in fact, it's quite nicely expressed by the Spanish phrase for a guy who plays behind the forwards. He's always known as a media punta, a half striker. And I suppose that's what he is. He's a kind of halfway position between a midfielder and a forward. And he scored a really nice goal, or at least it looked like a really nice goal. Watch it again. It's got a massive deflection. He did that dance, which apparently is a thing. And some of the players joined him, and not all of them. And he said, which I really quite liked after the game, he said, yeah, some of them didn't seem that convinced. They were a bit cold. So I think... Papu has some way to go, but more importantly, his teammates have some way to go to work out the Papu dance.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll go to Italy with Nikki. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Serie A then, Nikki. We touched on old goal scorers. Milan at top, they beat Crotone 4-0. Zlatan getting his 500th and 501st goals of his club career. It's extraordinary, Nikki, but it is, isn't it?
Yeah, and as some wags in Italy observed after this, if he scored his penalties, he'd be up to 1,000 by now. He's missed so many of them this season. Look, what's most extraordinary about this number to me, actually, is so that's only club goals. And if you look at the breakdown of them, 297 out of those 501 have come since he turned 30. So nearly 60% of the goals he scored at club football have come since his 30th birthday. I think that's insane. He scored 14 in, I think, 11 games so far in this Serie A season. I will say, until I'm blue in the face, Milan have won without him. And in fact, some of their drop points recently came after he was there, after he'd come back from his injury. The team is not actually totally reliant on him at all. But when he's there, he does, despite missing, I think, four penalties now this season, he does keep on scoring.
Is he still got the penalties? Someone, you know, it's Mandzukic come in and said, I'm also old, I can take the penalties. Is anyone taking them off him?
Well, Frank Kessié should be taking the penalties, frankly. Kessié has taken... Milan have had a lot of penalties this season. It's been a bit of a talking point that they have this really anomalous number of penalties compared to other teams in Serie A. I think they've had 14 now this season. Most of those have been taken by Frank Kessié. Two missed penalties ago, Zlatan said, all right, I'll stop taking them now. Frank can have them. And then a couple of weeks later, takes another one and misses it. So it's been an ongoing thing for him. But look, this weekend was not a surprising result. Crotone are awful. They're going to get relegated. Feels mean calling them awful, but they're out-resourced in Serie A. They're not really fit to set up to compete at this level. Yes, Zlatan has been continuing to make hay in Serie A, and he's not the only older player who's been doing it.
Pray tell.
Well, you already mentioned Ronaldo, so I assumed you wanted me to go on.
Yeah,
to
yeah. So, I mean, actually, his goal was brilliant, wasn't it? Because it's sort of on the edge of the box, and the speed of thought to kind of toe poke it in and to get the placement and the power with his left foot is brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really, really good goal. And it was... actually a really defining goal this weekend. So unlike Milan, Juventus did have a tough game. They were at home to Roma, and Roma had more of the ball. They had more of the shots. I think the final shot tally, Juventus had 3, which is kind of unthinkable. You think about all the talent in that team, Ronaldo, Morata, all the supporting team cast from Federico Chiesa and everyone else behind them. And they only had 3 shots in the whole game. But when you have Ronaldo doing that, when he only needs this sort of, not even a chance, just sort of half a yard of space on the edge of the box and with his left foot puts it straight in the bottom corner. And early in the game as well, it allowed Juventus to play in this, something we haven't seen a lot from them under Andrea Pirlo, frankly, this very classically Juventus way of, okay, we're in control of this now and we're just going to stay suffocatingly in control of this, even though we're going to let you have some of the ball, even though you're going to have the shot statistics that look kind of impressive. Now that Chiellini's back in that defence, Roma barely had a serious threatening chance. It wasn't like they were creating all of these great opportunities. They just sort of had the ball and didn't know what to do with it, which is, I would say, more ominous than anything else that's happened with Juventus so far for everyone else in this title race. Because if Juventus can play like that again, which they really haven't under Pirlo, then I think they become a much more threatening prospect than they have been to this point.
Nicky, what's going on with Edin Dzeko at Roma? He fell out with Paolo Fonseca, and then there was this weird story during the transfer window that there might be a swap with him and Alexis Sanchez, him going to Inter and Alexis Sanchez going to Roma in a swap deal, which would have been strange.
Well, I mean, it's a funny one because, frankly, Roma have been trying to move Dzeko on for the last year. There was this whole set of dominoes that could have happened in the summer transfer window that didn't, where Juventus were interested in Edin Dzeko. And Roma, he's the highest paid player and not by a small amount. I think he's on about 50% more than the next highest paid player. And he's 34 now, Dzeko. Roma were hoping to move him on and then to get Arkadiusz Milik from Napoli, which didn't happen. So there is this sense that Roma, that's an investment they're ready to move on from. But then there's this more recent development, which was, I'm trying to remember if I came on the show after this happened. Roma lost in the Coppa Italia to Spezia. And during that game, they used a 6th substitution, which they didn't have. So a pretty sort of big blunder by management. In the aftermath of that game, Dzeko seemingly had a bit of a go at the coaching staff, came to a bit of a war of words with Fonseca in the changing room. And after that was dropped for a little while. And there was this sort of standoff. Officially, he was injured, I should say. He was never officially frozen out, but conveniently after that game, he didn't appear for a while. There was a head-to-head in the last week, a sort of a sit-down, I should say, and they talked it out, and Dzeko is now back in the squad. But I think we're very much at a point with Dzeko at Roma where both for the player and the club, they want to move on. Both parties would be happy for that to happen. But to do that, you do need something in return. You need another forward of some description, even though you have Borja Mayoral is scoring an okay number of goals. You've got Mkhitaryan scoring goals. They haven't really got that classic number 9. But then Sanchez isn't also a classic number 9. So I don't know if that would have been a great fit either. But I think it's definitely indicative of Roma are ready to move on from Dzeko. And certainly Antonio Conte at Inter would have liked Dzeko. That's someone he's been keen on for a while. I think he sees as a potential alternative to Lukaku.
And I suppose at 34, he's sort of 3-4 years off his prime, isn't he, Dzeko? So, you know, that would be get him early and then, you know, he can come into things. How are Inter getting on? You said Antonio Conte trying to convince us he's like the fun uncle now.
Well, this is just something that I've picked up on because it's not like there's been some deliberate thing, but Antonio Conte got himself an Instagram account. And now we're getting all these things like, hey, look, I play pinball in my free time. This is how I unwind. And, and another video of him like driving a golf buggy around the car park at Inter's training ground. I mean, he doesn't really do anything. He just sort of drives it around in a little lap. And
is that a reaction, do you think, to Mourinho's success on Instagram? He's like, I can do that. I want myself a...
How do you do, fellow kids?
It does really feel like that, him playing pinball. So yeah, this weekend he was in the stands because he was on a touchline ban, and he posted a video of him with his brother, who's also on the coaching staff at Inter, in this director's box. And his brother's got a headset on to talk to the bench, and Conte is like leaning over him and screaming at it into this microphone that he hasn't got attached to his own ears, because presumably he's not supposed to be communicating with the bench because he's doing a touchline ban, and going and posted something like, oh, good thing I'm back on the touchline next week, guys. So he definitely feels like he's trying to be fun and relatable in a way that Conte perhaps hasn't done in the past.
Is Nicky, is lol the same? You know, do Italians use lol? Like, or is that different in Italian? Is that, what's the...
I don't know if there is something quite equivalent to that. I think emojis fill that role. Some Italians, certainly younger Italians, would use lol.
Is there a gesticulating furiously
well,
emoji?
This is not going to come across so much on a podcast. The fingers pinched gesture is definitely a much more common emoji in Italian text messages.
Oh, I'm so pleased about that. That's so good. And do you have two, you do two together with a face in between like that? That's amazing. You're obviously missing Papu Gomez. How are Atalanta doing? Are they missing him?
Oh my God. They had a ridiculous game this weekend.
It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, 3-0 up after 21 minutes against Torino. Torino have been fighting relegation. Atalanta obviously are fighting for a Champions League spot. And you think it's completely done. A year ago, they beat Torino 7-0. So you think, all right, here we go again. But Torino have this new manager, Davide Nicola, who has been building a bit of a reputation as a miracle worker for rescuing clubs. He did it with Crotone. He did it with Genoa. And this is his third game. They haven't actually won any of them. But in all of them, they've come back from going behind. And yeah, it was like 21 minutes of one game and then 69 of a completely different one in which they came back and totally bossed Atalanta. It was hugely, hugely entertaining game. I don't know if that's about missing Papu Gomez, because look, Jozy Bilicic scored. Robin Gosens is still brilliant at wing back, and he got what was eventually given as his goal rather than an own goal. Luis Muriel has scored in 8 consecutive starts. He's doing so well. So the goals are still coming for Atalanta, but the results have definitely slipped a little bit of late. So Papu can look back and think, well, they miss me on some level, I'm sure.
Now, the great-grandson of Benito Mussolini has officially joined Lazio's under-19 team.
Do you know anything about him as a footballer? Is he good on the right wing?
Well, he is a right winger, apparently. That's the best thing about the whole story.
Oh, no.
Seemingly so.
Also, Nicky, in Italy, do they do what they do in Spain? So the person that plays on the right wing is known as an extremo, so he's extreme right?
No, not really.
Oh, that's a pity.
You have esterni, but are not more often the wing backs, which that means external rather than extreme.
Rafa Benitez back to Napoli, rumours doing the rounds again.
Yeah, would be certainly an interesting one. Poor Gennaro Gattuso feels like things are slipping away from him there. They've lost 3 games so far in this calendar year. They lost to Genoa at the weekend, and he complained about it already after the previous game that he feels like the support that he had from the club has disappeared on him, and these reports are coming out and no one's sticking up for him. There's a couple of really big games for Napoli coming up. They've got cup semi-final second leg against Atalanta on, I think, tomorrow night. It's either tomorrow night or tonight. There's cup semi-final each night, and I've got them mixed up in my head. And then Juventus in the league after that. So... yes, a couple of big games, and this story about Benitez coming back is hanging over. Although I'm really curious to know if that's something that Benitez would actually want. And at least some people I've spoken to seem to think that Benitez's role is intended by the owner, if he comes back, to be more like a director of sport, with perhaps a younger manager coming in to work underneath him. So watch this space. He's certainly still a very popular figure back in Naples.
You really wouldn't want to be a manager working under Benitez, I don't think. I mean, Benitez's kind of approach to football, his sense of other managers' failings, which I think he feels very, very keenly because of the way that he's... Imagine working under Benitez. It'd be pretty tough.
Who would be the best manager to have to work under Benitez? Who was It's a Fact against? I've forgotten now. Who was that?
I mean, getting Mourinho in would be magical. Can't happen, I'm sure, but...
That's an Amazon documentary that we could all get behind, isn't it?
Finally, Nicky, you wanted to talk about... I think I've seen this, a player, you know, telling the referee to change a decision, being honest.
Oh, well, there's actually been a couple of these recently. Manuel Lazzari did it in a Lazio game, but it's the same game I was talking about before this weekend, the Atalanta-Torino game. Torino's Andrea Belotti goes down while sort of moving between two defenders, and the referee thinks it's a free kick on the edge of the box and books Cristiano Romero. This is while the score is still 3-0. So Torino are losing 3-0 and they could have a pretty good free kick on the edge of the box. And the referee blows his whistle, shows the yellow card, but Belotti jumps straight up and goes, no, that wasn't a foul. I tripped myself. There was a divot. And the referee says, okay, you're being honest and we'll take that off. Now, as a few people pointed out, then 5 minutes later or whatever it was, when Belotti gets fouled for in the penalty box for what goes on to be the first goal in this 3-goal comeback, none of the Atalanta players even dared to protest because they were like, well, he's been honest, so we can't fuss.
That's good thinking. Sometimes I do that in Saturday football. If it's like a throw-in and it doesn't mean anything, you go, oh, no, actually, that came off me. And then the ref thinks you're honest. And then you yell for everything after that and it's totally fine.
It's the boy who cried wolf in reverse, isn't it, basically?
There was one really famous case. Everyone always harks back to this in Italy when this happens. Miroslav Klose scored a goal with his hand against Napoli. And that was given. And then he talked his way out of it. He said, no, that was a handball and don't give it. So that's always the story that people come back to in Italy is closer and his honesty in that moment.
Right. Be honest, kids. That's the lesson. That'll do for part two. We'll go to Germany next. And we'll start, obviously, in Doha. Welcome to part three at the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start, Archie, then, with Bayern Munich in Doha beating Al Ahly 2-0 after a very long trip.
Yeah, so their trip started on Friday night away in Berlin, where they won 1-0 against Hertha, somewhat fortunately, not all too dissimilar to quite a few of their performances this season, but they've just always had a little bit more in the tank than their opponents. And they actually had the game moved half an hour earlier so that they could take off on time to Doha. However, due to the regulations of when you can fly in Berlin, they were ready on the runway at 23:59 and 30 seconds, which was a problem because they needed to be earlier by 30 seconds or so, meaning that they had to wait on the runway for another 6-7 hours before they could fly. As Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, the CEO, put it, he felt like they were taking the piss. But Bayern had to then fly to Munich because they needed to change the crew of their plane, so they weren't working too long. And then 9 hours later, from their original takeoff time, they were able to finally get on their way to Qatar, where they did well against Al Ahly, given that they were probably a little bit sleep deprived and whatnot, and Robert Lewandowski scores twice, nothing changes, even if the temperature does by a good 25 degrees or so. But yeah, just a little bit of a hiccup that they had to deal with there.
I did think about that. Like, you know, you know, I know metal expands and contracts in the heat. I always think that about aeroplanes taking off from really cold places and landing in hot places.
That's actually what helped delay the flight, is because they had de-ice the plane.
Ah, I see. But the play, you sort of de-ice Lewandowski. He missed a penalty, didn't he, in the Hertha game? Mm-hmm. But it was absolutely freezing. And the next time he's on a pitch, it's boiling.
He's a pro. He scores for fun.
I mean, I say that like I've never gone on holiday in winter and gone to somewhere hot and sort of been able to function as a human being. I have. I don't sit there just in total shock, you know. So
Max,
yes,
bamboozled by the weather.
What a stupid question. Anyway,
you know, Max, when you go to sleep and it's dark, when you wake up and the sun is out, have you figured that out yet?
No, I don't understand.
I don't know if I'm making myself even much as much of a bozo as Max here, but did that not used to happen to you when you were a kid and you go to cinema and you would come out and it'd be dark having gone in light? That was always a bit weird. Or am I being really strange now?
No, I thought that as well. I thought,
because you don't have the process
of
it getting dark.
Into broad daylight is very unpleasant.
Is that just, it's just for a cigarette before you go back in, I presume. Anyway, that sets up a final against Tigre UANL from Mexico, who beat Palmeiras in the other semi-final. That was played on Sunday. Former French international André-Pierre Gignac plays for Tigres, if you're interested. He scored the goal. Miguel says, like Gignac with Tigres in Mexico, what country in the Americas would the panelists go to, knowing full well they'll either disappear into obscurity or become a legend within that country? A tricky one. Some nice ones. Some nice islands off Belize you could go to.
I can recommend the Colombian island of Providencia. That's an incredible place to go to. I have never seen water so blue there.
It's just off Nicaragua, isn't it? But you can only get to there from Colombia. Is that right?
That's right, yeah. You can only fly from Cartagena, yeah.
Okay, that's some good advice for when we're allowed. Let's all go on a Football Weekly trip to Providencia. A live show from Providencia.
Make sure you wear the right clothes, Max.
You know? I'm so baffled.
Don't turn up in your scarf and boots.
My mind will be blown.
And they've actually got a football pitch on the beach as well. I'll send you a photo of it. It's incredible.
Me and my wife were on holiday in France, driving through France in the summer, and we were in this, I can't remember where, you know, in the Alps, but it's really hot, obviously, at the bottom of the mountain, and there was like, go and see the glacier on the cable car. We were like, that sounds fun, so we bought our ticket and got in there, and lots of other people got in there, and as we're going up, everyone's getting like snowboards and skis out and putting more and more coats on. And then like they're putting on like snoods and hats and more hats. And we're just sitting there in like shorts and a t-shirt going, what are they doing? And then like, as you progress, it turns out, right?
Oh God.
Glaciers are cold.
Quite cold.
Even in the summer. Fuck me, it was so cold. Anyway.
You really are an idiot.
Yeah, I am. And I don't really think how often I am an idiot, but I am. So Bayern are away for a bit. Leipzig.
It was just your attempt to smoothly segue back to Bayern from that.
I think people are more interested in RB Leipzig, but maybe they're not. Who knows? Look, they won at Schalke. Mustafi's debut for Schalke did not make the difference, Archie.
He had a good game, apart from when he lost the header at the corner for Leipzig to make it 1-0. And then he revealed, without any pressure in his post-match interview, that he'd had so little time with his new teammates that he didn't even know the names of everybody on the pitch. So,
oh, brilliant.
So
Sunday league, shaking hands at the start. Yeah. Dave, all right, mate. Yeah, good.
He did okay. I think Schalke, though, having only 8 points and the relegation playoff spot is 17 points now, they're going to do very well to survive from here. But they're playing against one of the best teams in the division in RB Leipzig, who, when they do take on Liverpool in Budapest, it will now be, that given the way that Liverpool are playing right now, I think that Leipzig are going to offer them a real challenge. Interested to see how Julian Nagelsmann plays it over two legs. They reached the Champions League semi-finals, of course, last season, but in those one-off games, I think that actually probably suited Nagelsmann better. Going up against Jurgen Klopp, who has proven himself over two legs one of the best coaches in the world. In that format, I'm intrigued to see how he does it, given the defensive options that he's lacking right now, how well Ozan Kabak can fill in. I'm not too convinced, given what I've seen of him at Schalke. In fact, the biggest moment of his season so far that really sticks in my mind is when he spat at Ludwig Augustinsson early on in the season, received a 5-match ban for that, and his defending has been pretty questionable. So, yeah. But
Was there any fallout to Leipzig having to play the game in Budapest or not?
It's not their decision. It's the German government. And as a result, we're seeing the Gladbach City game has also been moved to Budapest as well. But I'm not surprised. The way that COVID-19 is being dealt with over here, and the fact that there is this flight corridor to the UK, which is banned right now. Nobody is allowed in from the UK unless you're Demarai Gray, I think, who went from Leicester to Leverkusen. But otherwise, yeah, it's all closed off. And even though the deadline for this latest period of lockdown is until the 17th and the Gladbach City game's on the 24th, I think Gladbach and City just wanted some clarity. So that's why it's gone to Budapest.
Yeah, the same's happening here. So you've got Atletico Madrid, Chelsea. Now, unfortunately, I always get these two cities mixed up, which is not fair on them. I can't remember if, as you're saying, it's Budapest or Bucharest. I think it's Bucharest. They're taking that one too. I mean, it's a significant difference, but in terms of the name, it's so close that I can't help but not remember which one of the two it is. And there's the game that Real Sociedad are playing against Manchester United is going to Turin. I mean, playing in the Juventus Stadium.
Right. That was a lot of information for me to take on right then.
I'll tell you this, Max. In Turin, it's quite cold. Yeah. In Madrid, it is raining. In Manchester, I guess it's raining.
Thank you so much. Now I understand. Antonio says, Eintracht Frankfurt having a season to remember. Why aren't more people talking about this? The way they've come together as a unit, play with real cohesion, and revitalised André Silva is nothing short of exceptional. Archie, why aren't you talking about it?
Max, you know that in the WhatsApp group, when you said, what kind of things do you want to talk about? I put this under the fun stuff we should definitely cover. So
okay,
let us do this now.
Okay. Because for the tape, Archie is talking about Eintracht Frankfurt.
So they had a run of form before Christmas where they were drawing a lot of games. It was all very tight. Similar to what Sid was talking about with Atletico Madrid, except things just weren't quite going in their favour. And I remember speaking to outspoken defender Martin Hinteregger, more on him in a moment, who was saying that, look, everyone can see it. The fact is we don't have the same pace up front like we used to. And then Armin Younes, formerly of Ajax, he came into the side and he's really brought a massive difference to them going forward. They've signed Luka Jovic back on loan from Real Madrid, and he hit the ground running with two goals on his debut. And Jovic being back in the side has really brought the best out of Filip Kostic, his Serbian brother from another mother. They get on very well. Even one of their teammates, Sebastian Rorda, was saying that Kostic is going around with a lot more of a smile on his face, and he's really quite bouncy now. And this is all done on a pretty small budget in comparison to a lot of other teams in the division. But we need to come to Hinteregger, who is a real an outlier in professional football, similarly to Max Kruse, who we discussed earlier this season. He's been very good at the back. Martin Hinteregger is a no-nonsense defender who arrived from Augsburg in 2019. So this is when Eintracht Frankfurt were in the Europa League and they famously reached that semi-final against Chelsea. Hinteregger missed the decisive penalty
within that. But the fact that he even ended up at Frankfurt was something, because in the final week of the transfer window, he was still at Augsburg. And that week he gave an interview talking about his coach, Manuel Baum. And he said about Manuel Baum, "I can't say anything positive about him, but I wouldn't like to say anything negative either," which is pretty loaded, and saw him suspended by Augsburg, which then led to him going and rejoining Adi Hütter, who he'd previously worked under at RB Salzburg. And since then, Hinteregger, with this rugged style of defending that he has become a real cult hero amongst the Eintracht Frankfurt fans, to the point that they formed the people from the Fußball 2000 podcast formed the Hinti Army, set to the tune of Status Quo's "We're in the Army Now," which is well worth looking up. I don't know whether we can play a clip of it at some point, but there's some lines in it, for example, which is like, he cuts down opponents without thinking, which it's lines which rhyme better in German. So, er rasiert den Gegner ohne Schaum, which literally means he shaves opponents without shaving gel. And then, sein Lieblingsmensch ist nicht der Baum, his favorite person is not Manuel Baum. We're Hinti Army now. And then
there was something about red meat I saw.
He eats raw meat. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's it, raw meat. Yes.
But my favorite line, which actually rhymes if you translate it into English as well, is he has cottage cheese on his steak, he has a flip phone and still plays Snake.
Wer nickt den Ball auch gerne vorne mal ein, das kann doch nur der Hinti sein.
We're Hinti Army
now. Oh, oh, we're Hinti Army now. Er isst gern Hüttenkäse auf dem Steak, auf seinem Klapphandy, da spielt er Snake. We're Hinti Army now.
And I thought we were one of the funnier European podcasts.
If only there was a German word for how we're feeling now, Barry.
just finally on Hinteregger, he did a bit of team bonding the other week by taking his two defensive partners, Tuta and Evan Undicker, for a private helicopter ride, because he's training to be a rescue helicopter pilot back in his native Austria. So, yeah, he's a
great bloke. He sounds fun.
He is. He goes down to the local kiosk and talks to the fans as well. So, yeah, great guy.
He'll have a second career rescuing idiot tourists who go to the top of mountains not wearing suitable clothing.
And that's how Martin Hinteregger met Max Rushton, quite.
why are Dortmund rubbish, Archie?
Bad balance in the squads. I think that Lucien Favre was... I was critical of him, but I think that they would still be in the top four if he was still there right now. And there's just... It's always deflected away by the powers that be at Borussia Dortmund why things are going wrong, and they talk about mentality of the players, but actually I wonder, is this squad good enough? Roman Bürki in goal, we've been talking about him for how long now? He wasn't in goal at the weekend when they lost 2-1 away at Freiburg. Marvin Hitz was in goal and they conceded from long range again. I just wonder whether the senior characters in that squad, the likes of Mats Hummels and Marco Reus, are the right senior characters there. You want something more around than the players they've got. And we talk a lot about, you know, young, exciting players. And I think ever since, particularly in England, like that Manchester United team where Alan Hansen famously said, you'll win nothing with kids. And they did. I think that it's been taken that, oh, well, you can. And similarly in Germany, when Borussia Dortmund won the league with Jurgen Klopp, with a very young squad, I think it's been taken as a rule. But I think we need to remember that these are not the rules. These are the exceptions to the rule. And it is difficult to win with a squad of young players who are not consistent, who are still very much learning. And I think that, yeah, this squad is... it's just not quite got the right level of character and quality in it. You've got players who are big characters, such as Thomas Delaney, who is also the best interviewee in the league by far. But he is, I'm not sure whether he quite has the quality to bring with it. And I think, yeah, that balance is lacking, and they're now in real danger of not finishing in the top four.
Barry, take us to your boulangerie.
Oh, hoi, hoi, hoi.
Oh, God.
Sid has his head in his hands. So does Archie. Nicky is grimacing.
Oh,
you're all guilty by association. I don't know what you were expecting, but that's what you got.
Je vous salue, Max. Je vous salue. Well, 4 points separate the top three in Ligue 1, 6 points separating the top four, and PSG are not top of the table, nor are they second. They're in third place. Lille are top, Lyon second, PSG third, and Monaco fourth. Lille beat Nantes 2-0 over the weekend with Jonathan David scoring twice, and Nantes are now managed by the much-reviled former France manager, much maligned Raymond Domenech, who's quite the interesting character. They're not doing very well under him. 7 games without a win since he took over, and 15 games without a win overall. And PSG beat Marseille 2-0 over the weekend, courtesy of goals from Kylian Mbappe and Mauro Icardi. And while that match was on, police in Bouches-du-Rhône in Marseille handed out 97 fines to customers at a shisha bar who had gathered to watch the game, Marseille fans. And Marseille are still without a manager after André Villas-Boas quit over the arrival of Oliver Ntcham from Celtic. He didn't want him there. The club hierarchy brought him in over his head. So André Villas-Boas quit in anger, and I think maybe taking legal recourse now. George Sampaoli is believed to want the job, but he can't come till March. He's currently managing Athletic Mineiro in Brazil, and Nassar Largue is in temporary charge of Marseille. And it was Neymar's 29th birthday, I think it was, last week, and we all know he loves a party, but not allowed to have one in current circumstances. So to make up for it, Mauro Icardi, his teammate, and his wife and agent, Nara Wanda, they got him a life-size figure of Batman as a birthday present, which is And I think while they were around his house, their own home got burgled, and items worth £350,000 were stolen. So I don't know if any of you have £350,000 worth of... Pardon?
I say, fortunately, Batman got round there quickly to sort it out.
I was going to say, is that how much the Batman figure cost?
What do you do with a full-size Batman figure? Like, could you... Was it like an outfit, or was it just a figure?
No, it's basically a statue of Batman.
A statue of Batman?
I mean, yeah, to be fair, considering the alternative was probably a statue of Neymar himself, this is an improvement, isn't it?
Okay. Does he have any others? Does he have a collection? Is this the start of a collection that Neymar will have? Do you know where it is in the house? Where would you put it? Downstairs toilet? I don't think I'd want Batman looking at me during those moments.
How much space do you have in your downstairs toilet?
Well, also, that would also be a problem. I haven't thought it through. It would be a squeeze.
I don't want to make light because getting burgled is not fun. Like, it doesn't matter if you've got a lot of money. But there is just this visual in my head now of a burglar coming around a corner and seeing a life-size Batman.
Well, no, to be clear, Batman's not in the house that was burgled, is he?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the house that was burgled is... Well, unless, of course, they had a job lot of Batmans and they were like, oh, sod it. Just give Neymar another Batman. It'll keep him happy for a day.
Is it a job lot of Batmans or a job lot of Batmen?
That's a good question.
I don't know. What a way to finish. What is the plurals of Batman? And the collective noun would be useful if you could help us with that.
I mean, is it Batman or Batman or is it Batsman?
Batsman. I mean,
this is a problem, by the way, you do have in Spanish because of pluralization of things. It becomes a bit problematic, yeah.
Batsman sounds like the sequel to Scatman.
It does, doesn't it?
Well, in cricket, it's Batsmen, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, true.
Oh, it's also Batsman, yeah. But it's not Batman. He wasn't a batsman, was he? Well done to England for beating India. I think we should probably stop. Thanks, Nikki.
Thanks, Max.
Thanks, Sid.
Pleasure. Cheerio.
Thanks, Archie.
Thanks, Max.
Thank you, Barry.
You're very welcome.
FA Cup fifth round. We'll look back at it on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.